Good afternoon.
Hi there.
And welcome to Meet at the Hotel Bar. We are JC, Freddie and Huss from the band Flaws, a three-piece indie pop band from London via Huddersfield.
So since we started touring with Flaws, travelling the world and during our previous lives as session musicians, we realised that there are so many funny things that happen on and off stage and so many stories that never get shared with the rest of the world. They just stay in the dressing room and tour buses of the bands and artists you love.
Until now, in this podcast, we're lifting the lid on life on the road. And where better to meet up and tell those touring tales than a place every touring musician knows well, the trusty hotel bar.
Today we have rendezvoused with the amazing Woody from Bastille in Bournemouth on day one of their world tour, in promotion of their fourth studio album, Give Me the Future. Bastille are one of the biggest bands out there. They've won Brit Awards, had number one albums, headline festivals, sold out arenas across the world, and as you'll soon find out, are famously some of the nicest guys on the touring circuit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Woody was such a dude. He even invited us down to the show after the podcast, which was sick.
Yeah, such a great live band. Also, before we start, we should just mention the podcast machine decided to be a diva and didn't record the very first moments.
Great start.
Where Woody ordered a Bucks Fizz for us all. This is Woody from Bastille coming up on Meet at the Hotel Bar.
You bought a few bottles. What, pre-mixed?
Yeah, Bucks Fizz.
You can get them. You can get them pre-mixed.
There are other brands available, but M&S do a banging Bucks Fizz.
Really? I've always been a mix yourself guy.
What a way to start.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, 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 cheers.
Cheers.
So, welcome to Woody.
Hi.
Thanks for coming down. So tonight is day one of the UK tour with Bastille that takes you on to arenas across Europe and then States and then festival season. First question, what's your favourite city in the world to play in?
Ooh. Well, Plymouth, which is my hometown, always. I always end up staggering out of there by the end of it.
Yeah, understandable.
that's always fun. And yeah, I guess when we first did the pavilions, which we're doing again on this tour, that was a big sort of bucket list item ticked off because that's where I grew up seeing like bands I love when I was younger, like Muse and whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're going to go abroad, I mean, Berlin is just my favorite city on earth.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
It's just such a vibe. I will say Berlin, but obviously to all our fans in other countries, I love you all equally.
Yeah, the hometown gig thing, it's something else, isn't it? It's like, I mean, our dream, I mean, I feel like it's more my dream, but so me and Huss from Huddersfield, so playing at the John Smith Stadium is just like the ultimate end goal, like...
That's the retirement gig. That was what you said first time. Once. Yeah, I'm going to play the gig and then retire.
Done.
And we're like, and that's probably not the best time to retire. If you can sell out a stadium.
Technically, we have played the stadium.
Technically, we did, but there was no one there.
Right. We filmed an advert for the kit launch last season
in the
stadium. And JC is now retired. He played the stadium. He's
done it. Well, the thing is, like, so I've like my hometown club, Plymouth Argyle, like I'm quite close with some of the people there, and like they have talked about, do you guys want to do a gig down there? And like, we'd absolutely love to, but
dude,
there's like 3 or 4 weeks in the calendar year they can do it, where obviously because the pitch needs to be in a good state to play on, you know, for the actual real job of the stadium for football, and that's always in the middle of festival season.
Yeah,
so it's just it's never lined up yet.
Yeah, I think Little Mix played at the John Smith Stadium last year.
Yeah.
And they like ripped up the whole pitch, and there was like a load of like, I remember seeing like on Twitter like everyone like complaining and all these like, you know, Little Mix ruining this, Little Mix ruining that. So
we need to shout out to the groundsman.
Thank you for sorting me out. We just basically need to make sure that we don't rip up the pitch afterwards, otherwise like our reputation will just go down.
That's true.
I also like the idea of that it's actually Little Mix themselves doing it.
High
heels,
intentionally wearing the heels.
Yeah, right.
And so with all of these arena shows you've got lined up, do you feel like you're at a point now where it feels normal? Does it ever feel like, like just part of a day job, or does it always feel like...
It's a funny one, that. So hands up, before COVID, before I got to a point where we sort of took it for granted a little bit that it's always going to be there. I mean, like touring and like music in general.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, pretty much since we started, well, since the first album came out, 2013, and even before that, we've just been non-stop pretty much. Even on like off years, we've still done festivals and we've still done this, that and the other, and always been doing something. And then when it just sort of stopped, it was like, oh my God, then you actually get a real bit of perspective as to what it all means. And then doing our first gigs coming back last summer, like Latitude, that sort of thing. I never thought I'd be so pleased to see like Harris fencing in a Portaloo and a fly-by-night truck.
Feel at home again.
I missed you guys. But yeah, like doing arenas and stuff. It's funny because we've been doing this for quite a while now, and like there's quite a few new songs going in on this tour, so we don't have like that sort of muscle memory to fall back on. Whereas like Pompeii, I can pretty much play in my sleep now. But yeah, when you get to this sort of level, it's like and obviously we're trying to make it like a show, so there's a lot more video elements and lighting, and it's like a lot more, I wouldn't say theatrical, but yeah, it's a show rather than just like turn up, plug in, bash out some songs. So yeah, there's like a whole lot more moving parts to kind of deal with. So I guess in those things happening around you, there's like enough distractions where you're not kind of stressing about it too much. But
yeah, I mean, totally.
You guys have played big rooms and stuff before, but I find in bigger rooms, there's such a, like audience is so much further away and goes so much further back. It's kind of like there's a bit of a disconnect almost. It feels like otherworldly.
Yeah, I've always thought, because we used to do a few of those, you know, So Far Sounds gigs where
we have to,
and there's someone sat like literally a meter away from you, like staring
on
at you,
your foot,
like, and literally. They are so much more intimidating to me than you said, bigger shows where
when you see the whites of their eyes.
Totally. And what about it being like the first night of the tour? That's always a bit of a tense gig, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, we rolled out production rehearsals last night at like midnight. And like straight down here. So, and there's still a few things being worked on now, but I guess like the things that, again, ironed out now are like small details for us. But that, I think once the first show's done, because also like we've only run this set like in rehearsals, not at people. And as you'll know, like you can rehearse stuff a million times until you actually do it in like match conditions, so to speak, then you don't know how it really feels. So
the beauty of that. And like even like certain songs, like, where you just think like this is never going to work, or you just song that you don't really like, and then all of a sudden you play it live and it's like, oh my God, like that's like a keeper, even though it's like my least favorite song on the album, like that's the one.
The worst one is like, way around. This is going to be a banger, this is an absolute tumbleweed moment. God.
So everyone loves some hummus and pita on the rider. What is the most diva-ish item on your rider?
I wouldn't say diva-ish. I don't know, maybe it is. I can't remember who we nicked it off. We did it. We've done it since the first album tour. We asked for a framed picture of at least one member of the band in bed with someone famous.
And
we had some belters. There's been me and Liberace, me and the Queen.
That's so cool.
Yeah, all
have you got
stuff.
Those pictures on your wall at home?
They should be like in the Hall of Fame. But
yeah, I'm trying to remember.
You might have seen one when you're out with us.
Yeah, literally. So I used to play, for anyone listening, I used to play for an artist called Ella Rare, and it was like, I think 2014?
It's Bad Blood Tour, yeah. Same around that
time, yeah. So I was playing keys for her, and we supported Bastille on the US tour. So that hence the connection. But yeah, I vaguely remember that, like a framed... Was it a framed thing?
Always framed, yeah.
That's so cool.
But it's nice because then on some shows, like you can see the promoter rep has just gone out and like I've got some serious Photoshop skills to flex and clearly had too much fun with it. But apart from that, it's pretty standard, really. Oh, a bottle of Buckfast as well.
Nice. Yeah,
there we go.
Keeping it classy.
A Buckfast. You ever heard of Buckfast?
Is it a Scottish thing?
Yeah. No, it's drunk mainly in Scotland, Northern Ireland. But it's actually made in Devon.
Is it?
About 10 miles from where I grew up, yeah.
We should be drinking that now, sure.
Can you guys enlighten me and other listeners that don't know what it is? What is it, a spirit?
It's a fortified tonic wine.
Okay.
About 15%. I believe has about 3 or 4 times the caffeine of Red Bull as well.
Wow.
So it's the...
Shout out Red Bull.
It's a lot of caffeine. For me, like after or drinking on a night out, caffeine is the last thing I want.
We have it as a little sort of jet lag. Antidote.
And I bet it sorts the jet lag right out.
Yeah, just a little bit. You don't want too much of it. So yeah, we encourage drinking responsibly, obviously.
Yeah, drink Buckfast responsibly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know like firsthand that you guys and everyone else in Bastille are probably one of the kindest, most welcoming bands out there.
Thanks, mate.
No, I actually think that, and I feel like I've had so many conversations with other people, and they've said the same thing, and I'm just like, literally, Bastille are the loveliest guys.
Apart from the picture thing, that's a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
but the question is, have you ever had any beef with any other artists? Like, have you ever had any Twitter beef or any like, you know, this is the beef section.
We had fake beef.
Vegetarian
with,
beef.
With Alt J.
Corn beef.
Bacon, yeah. With Alt J, because they have obviously, we have the triangle thing in our name, in our logo, and they also have, obviously Alt J is how you do a triangle on a computer.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Is that why they're called Alt J?
Yeah. Uh-oh. Mind blown.
Where's the press one?
Yeah.
This is like ages ago now. So we were at a festival, probably the most pleasing festival name to say in the world, a festival in Hong Kong called Clock and Flap.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah. One more time, please.
Clock and Flap.
Nice.
Festival, yeah.
It's even better than Puckle Pop.
I know, yeah. And
what is going on?
So yeah, they were on the same lineup as us. And basically, I think Dan and Gus from Alt J were stood next to each other, having like a fake Twitter beef. Leanne LaHavis jumped in like, guys, what the fuck's going on? This is But I don't know. Yeah, we don't really. I mean, we kind of keep our heads down. Other than that, yeah, I don't know. It's not hard to be nice, really. I always find the more successful people are, if you meet some like megastars or whatever, it's like they're generally quite down to earth. They haven't got any ego or like things to sort of prove. It's always the ones that on the way up trying to make a lot of noise. Tend to have a lot of ego and things to say. But yeah, I mean, we don't really play that game.
Yeah, no, good, absolutely.
So one of the things we love about live gigs is that not everything always goes to plan. what's the worst thing that's happened to you whilst on tour?
I'll say the worst thing on stage.
Yeah.
The first time we ever played on like live TV was Isle of Wight Festival 2013. So we're on the main stage on Sky, and we, like many bands, we do all of our monitoring on stage just on in-ears. Like, there's no amps, there's no like wedges, it's all like on belt packs and headphones, and which I'd recommend for anyone because that will save your hearing.
Yeah.
So the Maccabees were on after us, and someone mistakenly gave the Maccabees the exact same frequencies that we were using at the time. And we learned the hard way, mid-song, that if you have two devices trying to use the same frequencies simultaneously, they just cancel each other out. So we were mid-song and we all went deaf the second they turned their gear on. And we were like...
So you lost all track,
lost all sound,
couldn't hear each other
everything.
On stage.
Thankfully, Ben, our monitor guy, knew exactly what it was. And he did a sort of Superman dive around the back and just like yanked all their cables out. So what was essentially 8 seconds felt like 8 years.
Yeah, I bet.
But I felt my world just drop out from underneath me. And it's like, we're on live TV and this is going to be...
And it's one of those things TV. You don't know how bad or if you survived it until afterwards when you watch it back.
Did you notice it? Did you manage to watch it
back?
I mean, we
were drifting a tiny bit.
Okay.
But I guess, I mean, there's like, I was still playing live drums on stage, so that people had something to kind of cling to.
Yeah.
But, God, that was grim.
Have you ever had the thing where, like, you're, like, on stage and you can hear because you've got your in-ears and, like, you're going for it, and then all of a sudden you notice that the crowd are, like, questioning and that, like, that all of, like, the front of house is, like... being like switched off and you're just like unbeknownstly like going for it.
We had that at a festival in Portugal. There was a power cut or something at front of house. We're literally halfway through Pompeii, like end of our set. It's like literally about to ride off into the sunset and we're like having it and everyone's just like looking around. Like, what's going on?
Well, they're having a good time.
Yeah. It's just us like going absolutely ham on stage.
That happened to me. I did a show. I used to play drums for a girl called Chelsea Grimes, and we did a show in Liverpool. And we were on the main stage. The Saturdays had just played, and the guy we'd set up done line check or whatever. And then the guy at front of house was like thumbs up. So I started the show, and this is like this big intro, and I'm obviously playing the drums super loud. Everyone on stage is like digging it. And like you said, looked out into the crowd and no one is even looking at the stage.
Have they started?
What are they doing? The guy on front of house was giving the thumbs up to the guy that was meant to be playing the advert. So there was like adverts playing out the front of house.
Oh, no.
And the West doing the intro. And yeah, Chelsea ran on stage and her mic wasn't even on and it was a disaster. Good times. Some of our favourite tour stories and memories have been on our days off, travel days, or stuck in the middle of nowhere, when you realise that Oktoberfest is a 15-minute walk away from your hotel in Munich. Is there any day off that comes to mind as the greatest travel day off you've had?
Oh, that's a good one, that. One of my favourite ones, so one of our tour managers, he's not at this at the minute, Eric Alighty, shout out, much love. so we're in America. We had a couple of days off, and like she's amazing at kind of basically booking in things for us to do. So yeah, we were based out of LA for like a few days, and she's like, right, got 2 days off. Like, we're all going out in the desert. So not as like Airbnb in Palm Springs, and basically she's like, there's mad stuff out here to see. So went to this place called the Integratron, which is it looks like it's actually in the middle of the desert. There's nothing around it. It's just this acoustically it looks like a wooden spaceship, like a UFO. It's this acoustically perfect room where they do like sound baths. So you know, if you like lick your finger and run it around a wine glass and it sort of hums a bit.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Imagine that, but with these giant bowls. So everyone's just lying down, and it's like this guy talks you through like, we're going to take you to the fourth dimension and all that sort of stuff. And it's just like, and everyone's going to kind of like just try and relax and stuff. Dick, our tour manager, fell asleep and just started snoring, which in an acoustically perfect room is really, really loud. we did that, and there's this place called, again, this is on the same trip. There's a place called Salvation Mountain where this guy who's like massively God-fearing basically built this mountain out of just like slag and rubble and all that sort of stuff, and just covered it in paint and Bible verses. It looks like a set from Mad Max.
Okay.
There's like decorated cars upside down and that sort of thing. And it's just there in the middle of nowhere.
I've seen pictures of that. It's wicked. I'm sure it's in like a bunch of films as well.
It must be, it's such a good location. It must be used all the time, you think. And then there's also the, on the same trip, the International Banana Museum, where it's just a
banana?
Shack. Yep.
Wow.
In the middle of nowhere. And it's just every bit of banana merchandise and memorabilia you can imagine. Just
now we're talking.
It's crazy. And we walk in, this guy was like, so, do y'all like bananas? I'm kind of partial, I guess, but just...
Don't really have a choice if you're there.
But I cannot stress, it's in the middle of nowhere. It's like that shack and a service station, and that's it for like 20 miles in the desert.
Well, that's on the bucket list then.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Have to go there.
Definitely go there.
Have to go there.
JC, you love bananas as well.
My nickname is actually Banana Boy.
I saw Freddie eat one this morning.
If you tell them that, they will love you forever.
Literally, we're going banana. Yeah, Banana Boy in banana. What's it called again?
The International Banana Museum.
Shout out. We'll tag him. What is the best advice that you've been given? And if you could relay that piece of advice to any up and coming bands, artists, and musicians, what would it be?
I would say practice what you're bad at, not what you're good at. It's very, because if you're good at a few things, it's like you get a bit of a sort of pat on the back. Like, oh, I play this, I sound class. But there's bits of your playing that are just absolutely horrific that need work.
Maybe
work on that.
That's good.
Obviously, have fun with it as well. Yeah, it is meant to be fun. I would say, especially in the sort of like rock pop world that we all exist in, you've just got to play for the song, not for yourself. Some people just chop in all over everything, and it's like, this sounds rubbish. Like, people down the front, if they can't dance to it or jump to it or whatever, like feel something from it, then you're doing it wrong. And then as a band, I think you just cannot play enough gigs. Just, you should be out as much as possible. Like, but obviously without having a sort of detrimental effect of like, if you're just around too much, but like for instance, mentioning that Isle of Wight story where everything dropped out.
Yeah.
We were basically running off muscle memory for those few seconds. We were flying blind.
Yeah.
So just being, yeah, it's in those instances that you're really grateful for having played the songs 1,000 times. Yeah. So well drilled.
Yeah.
And same goes for like we did SNL back in 2014.
Oh, sick.
And that was like, again, proper live TV. That's about as nervy as it gets. And I remember half of it. I think I was just on autopilot. Like, my hands just went when they're supposed to go, and it just all came out, and it was fine.
Yeah, but you got to trust, haven't you?
Yeah. But yeah, if you're like undercooked, then that's when you get really exposed. So, and also, it's not hard to be nice. As I said earlier on, just don't be a dickhead.
Yeah, you never know who you're going to bump back into as well. From
this happens all the time. There are people who are like starting out as like showrunners or just whatever, who we now come across now, who are like sort of like mid-level at like venue stuff and that sort of thing. And also, like, if you're on your way down, if you've been nice to people on the way up, they'll probably help you out. Whereas if you've been a dickhead,
totally.
People aren't going to want to
know. On your own.
No. Yeah. And what about advice to yourself? If you were able to speak to the 13-year-old Woody, anything you'd say?
Student loans are not free money. what else? I wish I had gotten into the whole songwriting thing way, way, way earlier. It's just like, as I'm sure you guys will know, it's like the more you do it, the better you get at it. And you just got to accept when you first start, it's going to be horrific.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that kind of came out of the pandemic is me and my friend Matt Wills, who also supported us back in the day, we've now got a sort of like a co-writing production partnership going, which had it not been for COVID, I wouldn't have started. But now, yeah, we now work together with the artists like every week, and it's like, it's I absolutely love it. I wish I'd done it.
Ten years
sooner, but obviously, I guess time and place and whatever. And I was a fraction busy with the band as well, so it probably wouldn't have lined up. But I'm glad I found it now.
That's wicked.
Yeah, I think lockdown was such a good time to train yourself in a new aspect of music, wasn't it? So yeah, still on touring. Do you have any touring hacks or top tips?
Oh, yes. Always have in your backpack or hand luggage enough toiletries and change of clothes to get you through the next day, because at some point an airline is going to lose your bag.
Oh, nice.
It's only a matter of time.
Yeah. That's never happened to me yet, touch wood.
Oh, mate, it's happened to me 4 times.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what happened? Recently, I was on a flight and we got those Apple iTag things.
Yeah.
We slipped them, one in each bag, and we were literally on the runway, and I was like, oh, I wonder where my bag is. And then like...
Morocco.
I took out my thing, and like, we were like on the runway, and it was saying that my bag was like 400 meters like east, you know, it comes up with a little thing and you're up. And I was like, yeah, my bag's not on the, my bag. I was like freaking out. Like, it was like, what is going on? And then like the announcement, like literally we're talking like 10 seconds later, the announcement came over and they were like, I'm sorry. We've just realized that some of the bags haven't been loaded on. We're going to have to wait and we'll be delayed a little bit.
We doubled
that. I was like, I knew that like 10 seconds ago. And I was like, yeah, I thought it was pretty fun. But yeah, so I'd say get one of the little iTags, they're good.
Okay. Well, also, I'm not sure everyone knows, but if airlines do lose your luggage and like say you need your things for work or stuff, you can rinse them. I think there's like a sort of $8 budget they'll give you. So it's like, you can just go wild, go shopping, and then it's all on the airline.
Gucci suit.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Push the boat out.
But yes, definitely have like the next day's like backup clothes on you and toiletries.
Yeah. Sounds like a good idea. What is the craziest thing a fan has ever given you? Present-wise.
Have you got an inspiring fan story?
Yeah. It's kind of bleak but heartwarming at the same time, in terms of, I guess it's more on what music means to people in general, because when it's just, let's say, like if the song exists like just on your hard drive or only your team's heard it, it's like it's very much yours. But then when it goes out into the world, then songs become like the soundtrack to people's like holidays, breakups, weddings, whatever, or like a certain period of their life. And then I remember we met this one girl in San Francisco a few years ago, and she said that her younger sister, I think this girl was maybe like 14, her younger sister's 12, she was in a mental institution for a while, and as part of her treatment, she couldn't contact anyone. And just, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but the one thing they did was like, every night, 8 o'clock, I'm going to push play on Bad Blood, our album. So it's like, we know we're doing something together at the same time. So it's like, oh, wow. That's hit you like a hammer. But it's like, you don't realize when you're just kind of like knocking out songs, like what some of them can mean to people at the time. But so that was kind of, heartwarming as it is like heartbreaking at the same time.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah, I mean, the whole goal of music, bring people together and
that's why we do it. And like, you know, all of the stressful days and, you know.
Exactly,
hear stories like, oh, okay, that's why I'm doing it. Like, okay, bonus question. This question does come with a quick disclaimer that it's entirely fictional, and any link to myself or any personal situation with Huddersfield Town this season is completely sheer coincidence. Picture the scene. We know that you're a big Plymouth Argyle fan.
Cut me in half, I bleed green, yes.
Plymouth Argyle, imagine that they're sitting in the playoff positions. So they are at the moment, but imagine they're in the playoff position.
I know what this is going to be now. Go on.
Imagine they're going up into the Premier League. And there's 7 games to go, but you realise that you've overlooked the potential of the team at the start of the season, and you've foolishly booked your honeymoon on the same day as the playoff final. What do you do?
I stay married.
Do you hope to God that you can watch it on the plane or at the airport? Do you move the flights to a later day so you get one less day on your honeymoon, with the possibility that we don't actually get to the playoff finals because there's still 7 games to go? Or do you pretend like there's no game on and just, you know, just ignore it completely and you're in full honeymoon mode?
Nah, my missus is a legend, and she But I guess because I don't ask too often, if I say I really want to go to a game, she'll allow it. So I imagine if it's like, can I just have 90 minutes to watch it? That would definitely fly.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, on TV.
Good answer.
Yeah, I will. Yes, I will stay married. Thank you.
Yeah. I've just realised the disclaimer as well. Is that where
it's actually happening?
Is it actually?
Yeah. I need to figure it out.
Were you asking Woody for advice then?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
I'd take Woody's advice.
Yeah.
Oh, no, shit. Sorry.
Yeah, only just clicked for me as well.
Yeah, we're not. I mean, we've got to get through playoffs, and then we've got to get through, you know, the semis, and then. So there's a lot of things to go before we get to that.
The wedding, obviously, and then the honeymoon.
Exactly, got to go for the wedding first.
Good luck, Nash. Yeah,
yeah, I know. Okay, quick fire round. So this round is basically, it's the first thing that comes to mind. So it can either be a word, or if there's a funny story, or you know, it can, or literally just one word. That's fine. When we say the 14th of July, you say...
Dan's birthday.
Oh, is it?
Hey. Yeah, that's what we call Bastille.
There we go, another great story.
See, I was doing a bit of research, and I was like, I'm sure there's a Bastille Day, and then I was like, it's the 14th of July, but I didn't know it was Dan's birthday, and that all makes sense.
A lot of sense.
So now we know when... we're just learning so much here.
Educational.
The number of times we get asked, like, so like, do you guys see yourselves as like revolutionaries? And that sort of thing? Like, that's just like a reminder for Dan's birthday, so he gets presents.
That's clever.
When we say Plymouth Argyle...
The greens are going up.
Okay, when we say Will Smith.
All the Smiths.
Yeah. Meme.
Honestly, this podcast is not coming out for a while yet, so this is going to be entirely...
That meme is going to be burned out way before that, probably.
Yeah. There'll be plenty more.
When we say Virgin Records.
Our former label.
Oh, is it your former label? Oh, okay. Oh.
Well, same label, but they change the name constantly. It was Virgin EMI, now it's back to EMI.
Oh, okay.
But
I need to do more research.
That's right.
Come on, Jason.
Well, there you go.
They might have changed it back by the time the podcast comes out.
Exactly, yeah, that's the thing.
It's true. Yeah. Although, yeah, we did... Well, yeah, so I'll backtrack. So Virgin Records, life-changing. Because that's the one we first signed to. So, yes, life-changing.
And then when we say, shut off the lights, you say...
Don't forget to dance.
There we go. There we go. And that's the end. That's the end of the round. So the last little bit, not only are you a drummer... in one of the biggest bands in the world, churning out number one albums. Your Twitter bio also tells me that you run your own record label.
Oh, yeah.
Dumond?
Yeah, Dumond Records. Yeah.
Dumond Records, there we go. Tell us about how that came about and, what you've been up to.
So, I am involved with an artist called Ulysses Wells, who he's brilliant, just makes filthy guitar noises and makes really good songs. So it's myself, Yuli, and Ben, who so Ben's a music lawyer and friend of ours. So it's the three of us run this like small label, and it's more of like a say passion project. But we just basically sign artists with a view to being a sort of stepping stone. I don't care what genre it is.
Yeah.
If we, as a three, agree it's good, we'll try and pick them up. Either do a single, do an EP, do whatever they want to do. But try and be a sort of stepping stone. Try and upstream them to like. Bigger labels, like
it's wicked.
Yeah, we want to be like a sort of ultimately become a sort of conduit. I mean, we had so many plans in place pre-COVID, but we are looking to start doing eventually like showcase gigs in like Brighton and London.
Oh, cool!
So I'm based in Brighton, the rest of the boys are in London. Just to try and create a bit of a vibe, and yeah, if we can get a bit of a good track record with people coming through, just to be involved and kind of help, really.
Yeah,
if anyone wants to. Lose money quickly, I'd highly recommend starting a record label. So,
yeah, people don't realize like all the like what goes on and like how you know all the different elements and how expensive it could possibly be.
Yeah, but ultimately, if it does what it's supposed to, then it'll be like a real fun thing to kind of keep doing on the side and just kind of keep our sort of hand in with like what's new and coming through. And also similarly with writing with Matt, as I mentioned earlier, it's like that keeps us very much ear to the ground and what's coming through.
Yeah.
It's just quite fun.
Sweet. It's awesome. Wicked. Well, is there anything else that you want to add? Anything else that you want to add to before we round things up?
If anyone wants to come to our European dates, go to bastillebastille.com for tickets. We have bastillebastille.com because some joker bought bastille.com and tried to sell it to us for €250,000.
You're joking.
Wow.
That's ridiculous.
Where it turns out for like 12 quid, you can just get bastillebastille.com instead.
Which is cool. It's better. We did a thing on Twitter. We wanted like the handle just Flaws.
Yeah.
And there was this woman called like Fionnuala Laws. And we like sent her a message, just a DM. She hadn't tweeted since like 2012 or something. And we sent her a DM being like, oh, hi, would we be able to we're a band. Handle, can we have your handle? And then she like, she was really cool with it, and she was like, oh, absolutely. And I was like, you know, if you ever want to come to a show, come to a show. And she like changed the handle to like something else, and then we like claimed it.
Absolute
I was like, legend. What?
So,
you know,
free tickets
absolute
forever.
Legend. So that's why we have the handle like Flaws, and it's not like a, you know,
Flaws.
Official or whatever it is. Like, what an absolute legend.
Yeah.
Sorry, shout out Fianola. Yeah, anyway, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We hope the show goes well tonight.
Yeah, best of luck.
For the rest of the tour. And keep being amazing. And thank you.
Greens are going up.
Thanks, man.
The greens are going up. A huge thanks to Woody and the band for being part of the podcast, to 1812 Hotel Bar at the Royal Exeter Hotel in Bournemouth for putting up with us,
and for the not-so-cheap round of Bucks Fizz.
Also, we couldn't do this podcast without you guys listening, so a huge thanks to you for being part of the Flaws family.
And if you do like what you hear and you haven't already, please make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. It really does make a massive difference for us, especially as we are just starting out.
Join us next time, where we will be chatting to Ella Eyre. Expect tales of cursed tour nightmares, tour bus crashes in Ireland, and why Laser Quest is the best day off activity of them all. Only on...